Warning, this podcast discusses topics that are known to trigger those suffering from PTSD, depictions of sexual abuse, abuse of a child, and many other forms of trauma, as well as the results of such. Listener discretion is advised.
Misfits Motorsports is more than a racing team. It's a mission. Dedicated to our nation's veterans, the Misfits mission raises awareness for veteran suicide while providing support, purpose, and opportunities for veterans and youth. Together, we're driving change. Learn more on Facebook at Misfits Mission. Hey guys, welcome to the Ginger Veteran Podcast, Episode 9, The Great Escape. This is our second anonymous submission. Somebody wanted to share their story without having the stigma attached to their name, and you know, we 100% support that here at the Ginger Veteran Podcast. And, you know, I encourage you guys, if you want to share your story, but you don't want to deal with the stigma that's attached to your name with it, please submit your story anonymously. We keep everything protected. The only person who will ever see it is myself. And it goes no further than that. And then, of course, I share your story with the world. But, you know, you and I are the only ones who know that it's your story. So if you guys got something that you want to get off your chest, go ahead and stop by www.thegingerveteranpod.com. Go down to contact us and reach out that way. Or you can find me on Facebook under Fred Gregory. And, you know, you can shoot me a Facebook message and get on to the show that way. So, you know, the story that was shared is very, very impactful, and it really touched me. I'm gonna say that, you know, I read this story just like I did the last one, you know, before I decided to put it on the show. And you know, it was tough. It was really tough. And again, like I've told you guys before, I'm not going to edit these episodes. The only thing that's edited is the theme song and the introduction into the story. Nothing else is edited. So you guys are probably going to hear some raw emotion on this. But, you know, I feel like this is one of those stories that's very important to, you know, just to kind of get that out of there, get that out there, you know. I think it's really, really important that we understand the dynamic of these stories and why we're sharing them and why we're, you know, trying to get everybody's story out. As many people that will submit, we'll put that story out. You know, and the whole purpose is to let everybody know, hey, you're not alone. And you might know that. I knew that I wasn't alone suffering with PTSD, but I had never officially heard anybody else's story or anybody else's experiences. And I think that's, you know, that's really the stepping stone to why this podcast is so important. So, real quick, just want to kind of, you know, go over some parameters on this one. The person who shared this story, they wanted, you know, obviously not their name attached to this, but they wanted me to attach a name to it, just to kind of give it some life. So the name that this person and I decided to use is Jake. So telling this story, you're going to hear the person's story. You can attach them to the name Jake. That's the person that's going to be sharing their experiences. So without further ado, here's episode 9, The Great Escape. Hello, my name is Jake. I suffer from ADHD, PTSD from childhood trauma, and dissociative identity disorder, formerly known as multiple personality disorder. So, just to kind of set the theme for my story, I have an early memory of abuse when I was 6 years old. My parents had divorced before I can even remember. I did not know my father then when my story starts, and I still to this day did not know my father. So, 6 years old, my mother's boyfriend came into my room and what felt like a time of games and a time of just bonding, probably a couple hours. We just kind of hung out and just did guy things, right? My mother was off doing her thing. She really couldn't be distracted by the fact that she had a child. And honestly, the stepbrother and stepsister that I had were more important in her eyes than I was. So my stepfather and I, we were bonding, we were enjoying our time together, and he kind of, got done playing, and he kind of just got up and gave me a little pat on the head and went back to doing whatever he was doing. I thought that was kind of nice. The next night he kind of came in and done the same thing. We spent some time hanging out, playing with Matchbox cars and just kind of doing the guy thing and playing with G.I. Joes and stuff like that. And, it was cool. And again, at the end of our time, he just kind of got up and, gave me a pat on the head and said he loved me and, walked out. So this happened continuously for, week and a half, 2 weeks. He was coming into my room every night and we were playing. And I remember, one night at dinner, my mom asked him, she was like, "Hey, where have you been? Like in the evenings, like you just kind of disappear." And, he says, "Well, going to Jake's room and, we hang out and spend some time with him and, get to bond with him a little bit more and get to be more of a dad." And she was like, "Oh, that's great." She's like, "Well, now I know I don't have to worry about either one of you in the evenings, right?" She's like, "I know exactly where you guys are. You guys are just hanging out, getting to know each other." So he continued coming in my room every night. Same thing. We'd play and have a good time. Sometimes before dinner, sometimes after dinner, sometimes both, it felt pretty cool, and thinking about it now that I'm older, this really didn't dawn on me then, but now as I look back, I can distinctly remember that, the times that he was in my room, my mom never came and checked on us, never made sure everything was okay, never asked if we wanted a drink or anything, it was just the boys left to hang out. So he came in there one night and he said that he wanted to play, G.I. Joes and some action figures, and I had some wrestling action figures and a wrestling ring and, all the cool stuff all the little boys had. And he wanted to play with G.I. Joes. And I remember him saying, wouldn't it be cool if the G.I. Joes went for a swim? Like, yeah, man, that's awesome. It sounds great. So he takes two G.I. Joes and he starts simulating them helping each other take their shirt off. He was making a joke about it, right? He was just joking and making a show of it, really, is what it boils down to. At least that's the way I felt, you know. And anyway, we took G.I. Joe's shirts off and, they took each other's shirts off and, you know, he was like, okay, he was like, all right, they're going to go for a swim. And, you know, they were going for a swim and, you know, they got back out of the pool and whatever, and, you know, put each other's shirts back on, and we went on about our business playing. And the same thing every night that he would come in my room. When he would go to leave, he'd pat me on the head, tell me that I was a good boy, tell me they love me, you know. And that would be it, right? That would be the sign off for the night. That let me know that he was leaving my room. So a few more weeks go by and, you know, pretty much the same thing. The G.I. Joes really enjoyed swimming. So they did that a lot. So he comes into my room one night, and back then I didn't realize it, but now I kind of do. I was groomed, right? And I was groomed for this expectation, because over the past few weeks, since the first time that he said something about the G.I. Joe's going for a swim, since then, the first thing he did was he wanted to play G.I. Joe's. So now what I'm about to tell you is what I realize now and what I did not realize as a kid. This time when he came in my room, it wasn't him saying, hey, let's play G.I. Joe's first. It was me getting the G.I. Joe's out as soon as he walked in. And, of course, he wanted to play G.I. Joe's. And G.I. Joe's wanted to go for a swim. So he simulated again the G.I. Joe's taking each other's shirts off. And he said, you know, it would be really funny, really, really cool for the G.I. Joe's to do. He said that they should go swimming naked. And they should swim without any clothes. And they should be free to do it together. So I said, yeah, that sounds funny, right? Guys get naked jumping into a pool for a six-year-old. That sounds funny. Sounds hilarious. Like, haha, you don't have any clothes on. Like, you know. So he simulated the G.I. Joes taking each other's shirts off, as he'd done before. He then simulated the G.I. Joes taking off each other's pants. And this was something that I knew that I wasn't comfortable with. And I was so uncomfortable with it, as a matter of fact, I told him that I was uncomfortable with it. And he just kind of played it off like it didn't really matter. You know, it was just a joke. It's just a thing. So, again, that night before he left my room, patted me on the top of my head, told me he loved me, told me what a good boy I was and how I did great things. Well, a few nights into that, and again, me repeatedly every night when he'd walk in, G.I. Joe's first. I had started saying it every time he'd walk in. Well, this time when I wanted to play G.I. Joe's, he said, hey, how about this? How about we pretend we're the G.I. Joe's? 6 years old. Of course I want to be a G.I. Joe. I want to be a G.I. Joe for all the right reasons, right? The G.I. Joes are are military men, and they protect people, they protect strangers, they do awesome things. So, of course, I said yes. He said, all right, well, the first thing we got to do is get in the pool. Because that's what the G.I. Joes did. That's what the cool guys did. So he said, I have an idea. Let's do it just like we do with the G.I. Joes. So then he took my shirt off. And then I said, okay, my turn. And then he had me take his shirt off. And I apologize. He said, okay, my turn. Right? The aggressor in the situation said, okay, my turn. So reluctantly, I took his shirt off. Because there was a part of me that wasn't comfortable and knew that something was wrong. There was also a part of me that thought, this is what the G.I. Joes do. And I know that that's what the G.I. Joes do because that's what he showed me. So we pretended like we were in the pool. He jumped onto the bed and did a cannonball with me on the bed and, you know, bounced me off. And it was a lot of fun. And I remember my mom walking in. She's like, what are you guys doing? Why is it so noisy in here? Why so much racket? And he told her, he said, we're playing G.I. Joes, but we're the G.I. Joes. Man, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I thought that was awesome. My mom knew me, the G.I. Joe now, right? The G.I. Jake, right? She said, okay. Kind of went about her business. Went about her business. And again, we were done playing G.I. Joes, put our shirts back on. We played Hot Wheels, did some other things, had a good time. And again, he stood up, knew it was time to sign off, patted me on the head, told me he loved me, told me how much of a good boy I was, told me that I was doing great things. Now, that went on for probably a couple more weeks, if not a little bit longer. He came in one night and he asked me, he said, do you know what really cool G.I. Joes do? Of course. No. What? He said, really cool G.I. Joes help each other out. He said, really cool G.I. Joes do all kinds of different things for each other. He said, did you know that G.I. Joes and all the little green army men that you have that play so well together. He said, do you know why they play so well together? No, I didn't know. I'm six. So he begins to tell me the reason why they play together so well is because they've taught each other everything they know. And then he asked me, said, Jake, do you want to meet your first girlfriend and have this big, elaborate, fancy date? And at the end of the night, she wants to kiss you, but you don't know how. He said, do you want to be embarrassed? And I'm thinking, I don't want to kiss girls right now, but definitely I don't want to be embarrassed, because I know what it feels like to be embarrassed, and I don't want that. And he said, well, G.I. Joes are the same way. He said, but do you know how they get each other ready? to meet girls and to be able to kiss them and not feel embarrassed? I said, no, how? He said, well, they practice on each other. He asked me, he said, do you want to be a G.I. Joe? And in my head, I'm thinking, I want nothing more than to be a G.I. Joe. And he said, okay. He obliged. Even though I never spoke a word out loud. He said, Jake, he said, I know you want to be a G.I. Joe. He said, that's all you ever talk about. He said, so let me teach you how to be a G.I. Joe. That was the day the innocent playing came to an end. And I didn't know enough to stop it before it got really bad. That day, we didn't play Hot Wheels. We didn't play with actual G.I. Joes. That day, my childhood innocence was stolen from me. That day, a grown man inserted himself into me. And took away every part of myself that I owned as a child. Sorry, guys. I was broken. I felt dirty. I felt betrayed. I felt lonely. For months, the only person that I interacted with outside of school was my stepfather. The man who I now know as my rapist. I laid in bed that night in pain. As I bled and I cried. And I held tightly to my innocent stuffed animals that I had lying in the bed around me for protection. And I fought back the urge. I fought so hard against the urges to just grab my clothes and run away. So the next morning at the breakfast table, I'm sitting there. My stepbrother and sister are sitting there. And I'm quiet. I'm not saying a word. My mom's making everybody's plates. And I see my stepfather out of my peripheral. And I don't even move my head. And he said, Jake, I forgot something last night. And he patted me on the head. Told me how much he loved me and that I was a good boy. I was 6 years old. This abuse continued until I was 10. I never told anyone. I never broke my silence. I held this in and I cried night after night, even years after it stopped. I would wet the bed. Every night, before I went to bed, I would go pee. But every night I would wake up drenched in my own urine. Fast forward to when I was 18. I knew how to get away. I didn't have a car. Didn't have a job. I wasn't allowed to work. I walked to the recruiter station. And that day, I enlisted in the U.S. Army. And that day, I knew all my troubles were gone. As soon as I ship out, I'll never have to see this motherfucker again. Ever. So I ship out, go to basic training, go to AIT, get out into the regular army, and I'm just an absolute shit show. I was a stud at PT. I was a stud at getting done what needed to be done. That was an absolute shit show. I was spending $300 a week. $300 a week on alcohol. And that's only because that's all the time I had to drink. I remember days of PT being drunk, just absolutely hammered, trying to run, trying to do push-ups. I would go over to the barracks at lunch, take 5 or 6 shots, go back to the motor pool, work the rest of the day. Go back to the barracks for the evening. Just get absolutely trashed. Somehow, some way, my NCOs never figured it out. My sergeants never figured it out. I was slick. But I was spiraling. I was out of control. And all it took was one straw. Break the camel's back. So I'm a brand new private in the Army. And I did what most financially irresponsible people would do. At 18 years old, went out and got me a car. 35% interest. None of the bells and whistles. All the high payments. All the high insurance. It was a sports car. Man, I thought I was hot. Driving my buddies off post. I was drunk. I was coming back on post. MPs at the gate never really picked up on it. I felt invincible. Like nobody could do me any harm. I've escaped that part of my life. And then one night as I'm driving home, getting ready to approach the gate to the base, one of my worst fears that I didn't know I had was realized. Blue lights lit up the inside of my car. Here I was, 40 sheets to the wind, drunk as fuck. Had no business driving a car. But I didn't care whose life I was putting in danger. Mine should have been the most important to me. And mine was the first one that I'd put on the line just to have a good time. So I pull over. And I got hit with a DUI. It's Friday night. Called my chain of command. They picked me up Monday morning, 5 a.m. My squad leader, my platoon sergeant, my first sergeant. I've never been so embarrassed in my life. I got a DUI. Super soldier. 300 PT. Mr. Get everything done in the motor pool. Always reliable. Always on time. Nobody knew the dark side that I hid. Nobody. I didn't show anybody. I didn't give anybody any of my time. My time was dedicated to me doing what I got paid to do and alcohol. Didn't take long to get kicked out of the Army. DUI tends to dampen everything in your career. This was really back when they got pretty hot and heavy about just kicking people out with DUIs. I understand it today. Didn't really have the same sentiment back then. But I understand it today. I was a risk. I was too much. So now I'm transitioning out of the Army with a other than honorable discharge, thankfully. Didn't get that full-on dishonorable. But I got other than honorable. I couldn't leave the area. I still had a court date. So I stay in the area. Stay around the same crowd. Hanging out with soldiers. A couple of soldiers came over and we got just completely blitzed. And I asked the soldier if I could use his car. 100% okay with it. So I took it. Second worst nightmare came true. Blue lights. Lighting up the interior of my car. Got my second DUI while I was still awaiting trial for my first. You know, I think back and I'm just really glad that I didn't hurt anyone. I also look back and I think I'm really glad for the next year I sat in jail. And I'm really glad because I was on this path that I didn't care about anyone. I didn't. So my year in jail, you know, it wasn't one of those I found Jesus and cleaned up my act stories. That's not it. My year in jail, I sat there and I contemplated and I was sober. I didn't do any of the shit that was being brought in people's asses. It's just not me. And I realized, if I can do it in here, I can do it out there. In here, I don't have any freedom. Out there, I have all the freedoms to lose. So I got out of jail. Moved back to where my parents are from. And I got to restart on life. Got some therapy. made amends with my mom. Got a good few years with my dad before he passed away. I'm on a cocktail of medication. But without the therapy, I don't think the meds would work the way they're working. You know, I think it's really important to iterate, and what I want people to understand from my story and what I share, you really got to keep an eye on those who you keep close. Always keep your ear to the ground, even when it seems like something's innocent. Because that's what it was. It was innocent until it was time to take mine. This is just a high level of what I went through and what experiences I've had after. My teenage years were pretty rough. I always remember people saying, he's just a troubled teen. He's just got a lot of issues. I did have a lot of issues. Nobody knew him. And it was my fault for not sharing. And I can say that now, wholeheartedly. It was my fault for not sharing. But I want everybody to know, keep an eye on the ones that are really close to you and that are really close to your children. It may seem innocent, but sometimes innocence has dark, dark intentions. And I could go into detail about what happened to me, but I can tell you right now, nobody wants to hear that. Just know that I was destroyed as a child, and I'm still battling through it. I'm still dealing with my demons. I still have nightmares. I still have days where I can't function. You know, I think as part of this podcast, I think you highlight that there's a stigma around men's mental health. Stigma around mental health in general. But especially around men's mental health. And you say that, you know, men have it hard and men have it easy. The sad part is that the men that have it easy give men that have it hard a bad name, a bad rep, and you dry up all the resources. Thank you for listening, and I hope my story has touched somebody, and I hope my story can at least motivate you to either get help or to share your story, or at the very least to know you're not alone. Thank you, guys. This was episode 9, The Great Escape. I'll see you guys next week.